Welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to Kevin O'Brien, and his new book is called Vicious. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He writes these incredibly interesting thrillers, and he's here to talk about them. Hello.
Hey, how's it going, David?
Hi. I never know how to introduce anybody. I always get tongue-tied. I'm like, and it's like, what do I say? You know, everything sounds so trite, you know?
I like the New York Times bestseller part. You got that out there. That's the important part.
Right. Now, have all your books been New York Times bestsellers?
No, just the last four.
So you're growing in popularity.
Exactly. It started out with it was out there for my first thriller was a USA Today bestseller. So and then it moved up to New York Times, which I guess is more.
Now, what's the difference between a USA Today one and a New York Times one?
Just the way it's tallied, I think. USA Today does I think they do their top 200, and it's all mixed up. You know, they'll have they don't divide it like the New York Times does by mass market and by hardcover, by fiction and nonfiction, and USA Today just does the whole kit and caboodle out there. So,
all right, let's talk about Vicious. Vicious is just out from Pinnacle. It's a paperback, so it's a very affordable $7.99. So
yeah,
it's a good book to read on an airplane, definitely. I mean, it's just one of those books you can really enjoy in something. You know, let's face it, being on an airplane is not exactly fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of my goals. If I think I can get somebody through a boring airplane ride, I feel like I've done my job.
Now, is your name really Kevin Vicious O'Brien?
It only looks that way on the book, doesn't it? They've got this right between my first and last name, and I keep telling people, yeah, I was sick of David, so I decided to change it to Vicious.
How in the world,
doesn't it?
Have you ever asked anybody how in the world they come up with covers? It's a very unusual cover now.
No, you know, and I really like this cover. I think it's a really cool cover. In fact, I was in New York just recently and met the artist and the designer of the cover, and I was thanking him. I was like, this is, you know, really cool cover, and he was very proud of it. It's got kind of an edgy cover, doesn't it? You know?
It does. This book, it took a different turn than I thought it would. For some reason, I started reading and thinking it was going to go one way, and then it suddenly veers off and goes another way. Did you do that on purpose?
Oh, yeah. I love taking them on a roller coaster.
Why did you do that? I mean, just to do that? I mean,
I like the twists and turns, the unexpected, and, just when it's sort of going in one direction, I like to sort of pull the rug out from under them. You know, it's the classic sort of psycho thing where you're following Janet Leigh for 45 minutes, and suddenly she gets killed, and then what do you do? And you know, once you pull the rug out from under the reader, they kind of you either turn them off or they're putty in your hands. Who knows?
And it starts out with a woman being abducted. She's out taking her child for a walk, and she gets abducted. Now, good grief, you're not even safe on the streets with your child anymore.
No, not in Seattle, as far as not in my books, at least.
So these all all your books take place in Seattle?
Practically all of them do. The Pacific Northwest, yeah.
Now, what is the population of Seattle today, even as we speak?
Oh God, that's a toughie. I wouldn't know off the top of my head, to tell you the truth.
I'm just curious.
It's a lot more people than when I moved here in 1980.
Are there unsafe areas of Seattle? I guess there are of every city.
Oh, you know, there are dicey areas in every city, and there sure are in Seattle. And the area where I had her walking her baby is Volunteer Park, which is a pretty safe area. I wouldn't want to be poking around there after dark, but it's pretty safe during the day. It's a really lovely park in the middle of Seattle.
And then we head off to Susan Blanchett, who turns out to be one of the prime people in the novel, which I didn't realize was going to happen. I thought we were going to stay with the woman with the baby.
And right, and then fast forward 10 years to Susan Blanchett, you just got a taste of something that went on back about 10 years ago in the late 90s.
One of your books was a hardcover, you told me, I think. Now, is it
right?
Is it harder to write a hardcover than a paperback? Is there a difference?
No, not really. The first two books I ever wrote were not thrillers. The first one was called Actors, and I tell people it was like The Thornbirds Go to Hollywood. It's a sweeping saga. It's sort of a soap opera, and it came out in 1986. And it did okay. It made me a little money, and it sold overseas as well. And that came out in hardcover, and then it came out in paperback. And same with Only Son, which came out in 95, and that was about 10 years later, and that was my second book. And that was hardcover as well. And when I sold my first thriller, The Next to Die, they said, oh, we're going to do a paperback original. And I thought, oh, you know, God, I hate to hear that. I feel like I took a step down, and then that was the bestseller of all three of them. It made the USA Today bestseller. So I've been writing paperback originals, thrillers ever since, and they've been making me money, thank goodness.
I'm trying to remember which one I read first. I think I've read Next to Die. It's hard to remember all the ones you've read. But
the titles start to blend together after a while, don't they?
They do. I don't like to say that because I'm afraid the writer will take offense when I say that. You don't remember all my plots?
You don't have to.
Do you remember all your plots?
David. What's that?
Do you remember all your plots?
Yeah, pretty much. I can tell you, the Next to Die was film stars being stalked by some crazy hate group that wants to malign her reputation and then murder her, I think.
Do you have a twisted mind?
Fairly twisted. I scare myself sometimes. I think, God, how did I come up with that? That's really creepy.
Do people say that? Do people write in and say, you're really creepy?
Yeah, well, it's funny. They meet me in person. They're like, oh, my God, I can't believe you write these creepy things. You're so nice and personable and funny. And
it can't be both, right?
Yeah, I think I just tap a dark side. It's funny. I have to tell you, I live in a little co-op, and I keep the keys for everybody who if they get locked out. I've got all the keys to all the apartments, and one of my neighbors was sitting in bed reading my book, and she turned to her husband and she said, oh my God, he's got our keys. He can get into our apartment. This guy with this twisted mind.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. I mean, I'm trying to think how I would feel knowing that.
I have the keys. Yeah. I do, David. You didn't know this, but I got them made. I know where you live.
But I'm trying to put myself in her situation and think, how would I feel? How would that make me feel?
Well, she knows. She's like known me for a couple of years, so I think she's okay with it. She liked the book and everything.
You are a very personable guy. I mean, that's what strikes me as first when I first talked to you the other day. I mean, I you're enjoyable to talk to because you bring life to a conversation, which is nice.
You pump me up, David. Thank you.
No, I'm serious about that. I mean, you're easy to talk to. You're very friendly. And you know, just because you have a twisted mind doesn't mean you're not.
you don't know what lurks beneath the surface.
Why do you like it? Why do you like writing these kinds of books?
Well, I think, I think when you're a kid, you like to scare yourself. I think it's one of the first things, you know, you like to do is the roller coaster ride, the haunted house. And I know when I was a kid, I loved those Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Thriller and One Step Beyond and Twilight Zone. And then I'd be terrified. I'd sleep with a baseball bat by my bed. And then the next day, I would want to watch more scary stuff. It was very funny.
So you actually get scared sometimes even writing the books?
Oh yeah. No, I usually write it late at night, and
Why do you write late at night? I'm curious. What is it about late at night?
I think it started out, you know, with my work schedule. I used to work for the railroads, and I would be, you know, all the live long day working for the railroads, and I would take the nighttime to do my writing, and that was sort of my escape. And I was on the road a lot, so this was the days before the internet, so it was either Brady Bunch reruns or entertaining myself in some small town hotel room, and that was the best way to spend my time was doing my writing. So
now you have blurbs from Tess Gerritsen and Lisa Jackson, I assume you know both of these ladies.
I don't know Tess. I outside of writing her to thank her for the blurb, and she wrote back and said you're welcome. If she liked the book, it was Watch Them Die, I think, that she quoted.
Right.
And I know it was One Last Scream, and
well, there's one on Vicious, too.
That's right. She's...
Oh, yeah, it does say on One Last Scream, excuse me. So it was originally on that. I didn't know they did that. I thought they usually did it for the book.
They'll repeat it. If it's good news, they repeat it, for sure. But Lisa Jackson, I know. I've met her several times, and we've gone out to dinner, and she's a hoot. She's a lot of fun. So she's another one who's, you know, you'd never guess that she writes these warped, you know,
absolutely. Lisa Jackson, yeah, they can give you nightmares for weeks. I mean, really. There's something about her books.
The funniest, most disarming, you know, you can kick back and have a great time with her.
And somehow when you see an author smiling on their book like she does, like she's having fun, you wonder, why is she having fun writing these really gruesome thrillers?
I usually try for more serious stuff,
Are you afraid that sometimes the people are going to think you're too gruesome?
I think my stuff is fairly tame compared to a lot of the writers out there. I don't have a lot of gore in my stuff, so my editor and I, my editor always wants it a little more gory. I think gore is the sex of today. You know what I mean? They used to make the book sexy, and now they make them gory. But he's always going, you know, just a little bit more blood. I want really, you know, and I'll be like, okay, and I'll meet him halfway because I don't like the excessive violence and gore. I like to take the reader up to a point and then let their imagination fill in the rest.
I think of the movie Seven, which a lot of people think is too excessive in its gore and depict in some of the scenes in that are very, very memorable.
Oh yeah.
But how, as a writer, do you translate something like that to the page? Or how do you make write a book that's going to be so memorable, like a movie is? I mean, a movie, you can back and watch it time and time and time again, and you can read a book time and time. But how do you make it memorable? What do you do to set up a scene to make things memorable? How do you do that?
The emotional investment you have in a character really helps. Last night I was writing a scene where, you know, I set it up so you kind of thought this woman is you know, a goner. Somebody's gonna come in and kill her into her house and slay her. And so, you know, I upped the ante, and I had a sick kid at home and another kid that was, you know, about 6 years old. And you know, I talked about how the night before with her sick child, she was, you know, up giving him cough medicine in the bathroom with the shower running full blast and hot water, so the steam comes up and clears out his sinuses, and just sort of did all that, so you kind of have a more of emotional investment in this woman when she starts hearing noises downstairs and possibly could get hurt. So I think that's where I like to sort of, that's what I like to do to sort of up the ante and
they say,
the reader emotionally involved.
Right. And they say that every little detail of the book should have something to advance the plot. And
yes.
You think of some of the great writers who have written, you know, write on descriptions on and on, on every blade of grass that's described and everything. You don't really have time to do that in your books unless they're going to be like the Encyclopedia Britannica, you know?
And, you know, I must admit, I kind of sometimes after a while I sort of skip over that stuff. When it gets way too descriptive, I always find myself like getting kind of, you know, impatient, like, you know, move on. You know, I've always quoted an example. My brother-in-law was telling me, he was saying that he there's a line out of some song that says, God bless this kitchen, said the knick-knack shelf. And you, right away, you can see the whole kitchen, you know, just by saying, you know, that one phrase. And if you could do that, then the reader's happy. So usually I try and find, you know, something, you know, that they had an old 50s dinette set in their kitchen. And so that's all you need.
You can't really just say, like, if you make up a character name, Susan walked down the street, Susan did this. I mean, and you think that, boy, if I kept writing like that, it would sound so boring.
Yeah, so you have to pick and choose what kind of details will help. You know, I always find that the people that just give a barrage of details, you start to lose it. You can't see the forest for the trees, you know, because it's like, and she had a mole on her left chin, and she had, you know, her hair had some dark roots, and, you know, after a while you're like, okay.
I think you begin to realize how difficult it really is to write.
Yeah, well,
because
sometimes
it isn't
pulling back. It's not. It's when knowing when not to give too many.
You can't do the C-spot run things. You know, that
right.
Just doesn't work anymore. You know, people don't want to read about.
You're always walking a fine line between giving them too much information and not giving them enough. You know.
Now you write usually one book a year. Do you actually work on two books a year, or is it usually just
one? Oh, I wish I could. I'm still kind of a little slow since they're all paperback. They're all, you know, originals.
But you've written all these books. Don't you get quicker as you go along?
It seems like I do, I'm a tiny bit quicker. What takes a long time is to get started. I usually do a very long outline. Usually, in fact, for Vicious, I think it was about 90 pages.
Wow.
And, which I believe in. I think thrillers should have an outline. That way the author knows what he's getting into when he starts a book. And, you know, too often you get these thrillers that, you know, you finish them and you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, what about this, this, and this, and I really didn't get the motivation of the killer, I didn't really get this, and, you know, the killer seemed to come in at the last minute, and I, you know, and I think that's because a lot of thriller authors don't have outlines, and suddenly their editor is saying, you know, where's the book? I need it now, and they have to wrap it up real quick, and since I have an outline, I can always refer back to that, and my outlines get more and more detailed as the book, the outline continues, and so as I'm finishing up my book, I'm practically almost looking word for word. I've got it all detailed and everything else, and it's just a matter of embellishing it a little bit.
Do you think, now I don't know if you've, we talked about this last night when I was talking to you, about writing a series, whether that would benefit you, whether you would enjoy writing a series. Do you think it would take away from your writing to write a series? Would you become bored with the character too much?
I like the working with the gifted amateur, you know, and I always find it's a lot more, I was talking a little earlier about the emotional investment you get into a character and feeling the danger, and I've always thought it's a lot scarier if a school teacher has to solve a murder or be murdered herself rather than a forensics expert. You kind of expect, well, the forensics expert can take care of herself or himself, and that the school teacher, you already got a little, you know, sympathy for them, and so I like having the talented amateur who has to rise to the occasion to solve a murder, and it doesn't hurt if that person has a kid or an elderly parent that they're looking after, because then we care for more them even more, because they're looking after somebody else, they're not just looking after themselves. And getting back to your original question, if you have the talented amateur, it's a one-shot deal. You can't have the school teacher solving her crime in the next book, and the next book, and the next book. She's eventually got to become an expert at something. And so that's where I balk a little at doing a series. I'm not dying to do something where somebody's a policeman or a detective or something, but, you know, never say never. I could, you know, rise to that occasion myself.
Now, I don't know if people know out there, but a lot of times paperbacks are not reviewed. Only hardcovers are reviewed.
Right.
Do you get reviewed?
I do get some. I usually, you know, once in a while I'll Google myself and find a review I didn't know I had. But we were reviewed by Publishers Weekly and several online places reviewed Vicious, and they gave it a thumbs up, thank goodness.
So. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Do you think your writing gets better as you go along? As each new book comes out, do you think your writing gets better? And how do you do that?
I you know, not to pump myself up, but I think I get a little bit better each time. And, you know, I know what to avoid. What gets more difficult each time is coming up with new and original ideas. You know, I'll be like, oh, wait a minute, I killed that person that way back in this book. I can't do that this time.
Well, how come then Nora Roberts never has trouble figuring out what to write? Good God. I mean,
yeah, I wish I was as prolific.
I mean, I'm amazed. How is a woman, I mean, and do you have that many ideas?
I don't think I do. I have a few, well, you know, not to, you know.
I mean, let's talk about Vicious. Where did the idea for Vicious come from? And why don't you describe the book a little bit for people who haven't read it?
Oh, you bet. Vicious is about a serial killer who was in Seattle in the like late 90s, around 2000. And he this is where it's kind of gruesome, he abducted women in front of their kids and left the child a toy, like a battered toy, and the mother would show up later dead. And he sort of faded from the radar and never was caught. And there were a few little incidences, like in Washington, D.C., and then another one in Oakland that were similar, but they never really nailed the guy. And it flashes forward to 10 years later, where Susan Blanchard is in a resort town with her little son, and she's a widow, and she's meeting her fiancé there for a sort of a restful weekend, and her fiancé disappears, and she starts spotting somebody lurking around the little lakeside cabin they have, and she thinks possibly this trio of teenagers down the road about a mile, they're her closest neighbor, she thinks they might have something to do with her fiancé's disappearance, and she's right. I don't think I should give too much more.
No, away. No, that's enough. Don't go too far. People have to buy the book. You know,
right. They got to find out.
It is an intrigue.
But you asked about how I got the idea. The book before that was very complicated. It had a lot of characters, and somebody reviewed me on Amazon. And I have to admit, I do sometimes look at my Amazon reviews, and they said, you know, I should really watch Dead Calm, and the film with Nicole Kidman.
Right.
And I own it. I, you know, it's one of my favorite thrillers. And they said you should watch that because it all takes place on one setting, and it has a limited amount of people in it, and you know, they had a hard time keeping track of all the characters in my last book. So I was very fascinated by one portion of Dead Calm where Nicole Kidman traps a possible, you know, homicidal maniac and has him tied up in the cabin of her boat. And I just found that very compelling, and I think that gave me the idea to kind of go with that idea in Vicious.
Very,
So you never know where you're going to get your ideas from. So in fact, I haven't, that particular reviewer reviewed me several times on Amazon, several of my books, and I'm waiting to see what he thinks of Vicious. Watch him not like it after.
Now, do you have a set amount of words that they tell you to write, or do you have free reign?
Nope.
Could you write a...
Nope, I usually write around 400 pages.
Why is
400
it?
And 450.
Why that amount? I mean, is there a certain reason for that, or
it's just
the way...
It's basically how long it usually takes me to tell the story.
Do you ever get stuck writing it and not know where to go?
Oh, occasionally, but usually because I have the outline.
Right.
It's usually in the outline where I'm kind of, like, not sure where to go. Occasionally, when I'm doing the actual writing, I will look something at the outline and say to myself, oh, you know... Wait a minute, why do I have that happening here? That really doesn't go with the motivation of the character at this point. So then I have to, you know, go back and... That's the closest to getting really blocked that I get when I'm actually writing.
I just read a very popular book where... And it's a thriller, and there's a scene where there's twins being separated and an operation. It was just fascinating.
Ooh,
and
Siamese twins? Or
yeah, Siamese twins. Uh-huh. But recently, I thought to myself, well, it's so interesting you read a thriller and then have something where you learn something. You learn how things are done. And I think I've had people say to me, well, I don't read fiction because I don't learn anything. And I want to learn something from, that's why I read nonfiction. So why do you feel about that? And your books are not detailed that way that I can remember, that where you learn things during your book. But how do you feel about that, something like that?
Oh, you know, I think that I agree with that. I think my agent once told me, she said, you know, when people read, they either want to be transferred someplace else, they want to learn something, or they just want to be emotionally moved. And so I try and, you know, help them along all those lines. There's not much learning in my books, but I do try and, you know, drop a few details and stuff.
Maybe you could have a hoarder in one of your books or something, you know? Because hoarders are so popular, you know?
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Hey, that's a great idea for a book. A hoarder goes through his stuff and finds a dead body.
Ooh.
Just think about that. Wouldn't that be a good book? I'm going to write that book tonight.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to want royalties if I start writing it. It's your idea.
But I don't know where these ideas come from in my head. They just kind of pop in my head. But it just hit me that, you know, because hoarding is so popular, you could have the hoarder.
We all have our lockers.
It could be called the hoarder's murder, or something like that.
That's the next one. Well, I guess the big thing is paranormal. Going on. This is what's really popular.
And paranormal and vampires and stuff.
I was going to say, vampires are on their way out and paranormal's on their way in, according to my editor.
Do you ever worry about repeating yourself? You said earlier about you killed somebody, you have to kill somebody different each time and make everything fresh that way. And how do you make your characters fresh each time?
That's a great question. I usually try and just, you know, tweak something different in their background each time, give it a shake it up this way or that.
And I always love books where you don't know about the character until the end. You find out something really shocking at the end.
Yes, I like that too. I like, you know, either...
Hey, can I be your editor for your next book?
What's that?
I said, can I?
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, I don't know. We'll have to check with my editor if he wants to take a break. He's pretty good. In fact, you said, do I ever find I'm repeating a plot? He catches these things right away. He's like, well, wait a minute. You did this in your last plot, and you know, or you did this 5 books ago where you had a copycat killer, or you did, you know. So he's on the ball with that stuff.
Yeah, well, somebody, I think it's important that somebody is, because, you know, things can easily get missed. I mean, when I read a book and there's a word missing or there's a letter missing, I get upset. I'm like, how could they not care about the book?
Oh, I know. It's crazy. My book Left 4 Dead, which it's one of my favorites, to tell you the truth, but it does have some typos in it, and when I got enough emails from people saying, you know, there's typo here, and here. So since that book, I've hired my own proofreader to go over each one of my manuscripts so that, you know, there's far less chance of a typo or, you know, some grammar, you know. Mistake.
So what do you do to get away from writing all this? I mean, I assume when you sit and write this book that it does disturb you in some way. And what,
you know, you're right. I usually try and read something real light afterwards, usually nothing too heavy. In fact, usually like an article or something in Vanity Fair or you know, just some light reading before going to bed, because that's, you know, I go to bed with right after I finish writing almost.
Do you ever have any ideas for any other different kinds of novels? I mean, would we ever see one of yours that's totally different?
You know, I'd love to do it, but I think I got to get established even more first, and I'm afraid that people will be waiting for the dead body to come out. but I was talking to my agent and saying, you know, I would like to do another book like Only Son, which a lot of people tell me is their favorite, and it's not really a thriller, although it's got some thriller elements in it. And she was like, well, you know, we can let you do that, but, you know, it's probably not going to make a lot of money because it's not what people want from you. And they always feel that, you know, if you do that, you might turn some people off, you know, because that's not what they were.
Really? I mean, how do they know that, I wonder? How do they have people?
Yeah, you don't know. It's very funny. You just, you know, they don't know. I think they want to pigeonhole you, which is, you know, there are worse things to be pigeonholed in writing thrillers, because I've always liked suspense stuff. So,
what do you think your strengths are in writing? What do people tell you they like about your books? What do your fans tell you?
I love it when they love the characters. That's you know, that's a real, that makes me feel really good. And I think that if I am different from other thriller authors, it's that I try and write thrillers with a heart where you really care about the characters and you really care about the victims as well. That it's not just, you know, it's not just slasher stuff where the victim is some, you know, caricature of, you know, that you don't give a damn about.
And the women are running around in their underwear and outside,
right,
outside,
you know,
themselves.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the teen couple that are getting it on who gets killed, and, you know.
That's all been done before. You have to come up with something new each time, and it's got to be very difficult. I mean, every time you come up with an idea, chances are somebody else has had something close to that idea.
So exactly.
How do you make it fresh? How do you make? I mean, and a lot of times, like I was telling you last night, there are certain authors that where the characters are so memorable that is what that distinguishes the book.
Yes.
And when you read a book, you want to feel those characters. You want to feel like they're real people. You don't want to feel like they're just cardboard cutouts. And, you know,
exactly.
And I think of some authors who are very popular, who write very formula-driven novels. They're always the same. It's always a woman in trouble. It's always a woman who's has a murder show up in her life somehow, and you know, and she doesn't know how she's going to get her life back together. But it just follows a certain pattern. And maybe the plot is in a different place, or you know, there's something different in each book, but still, you don't feel like you know the characters. And who wants to read a book like that? I guess
you need to have emotional investment. Like I was saying, you really need to care about this person, and you know, reminds me of Bob Dugoni, one of his thrillers. He writes political lawyer thrillers.
Right, I've read some of his. Yes.
Yeah, and he's great. He's a nice guy too. In fact, mm-hmm. I mentioned him in Vicious. Somebody is reading Robert Dugoni thriller late at night. I don't know. Did you catch that?
I did pick up on that.
And he, I told him, I ran into him a couple of days after I wrote that scene. I said, I just put a character reading one of your books in my my new book. And he said, well, I'm going to do the same thing in Bodily Harm. So he has somebody reading a Kevin O'Brien thriller.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so and both books came out the same day. And both books are doing pretty well. So I think it's a good luck charm. But getting back to Bob, one of his characters in his lawyer thrillers, and I forget which one it was, but she was coping with breast cancer. And
right, I remember that.
All this, I don't know which one it was. I'm sure you probably, it's on the tip of my tongue.
I can't remember the name.
But you know, the fact that that is happening to the character, just it's what I like to go for when I'm doing my thrillers too, is like, you're going to care about this character outside of the fact that she's in danger. She's got other problems, you know, and I think that's one of the mistakes some of these formula people do, is they just, the only problem that person has is that their life is in danger. And I think it's just so much more involving if the person has a lot of other problems.
And I've heard authors say that it'll put character in a book, but what if you make that character, what if that character's dying and this is his last case? Now, how much more interesting does the book get then, you know?
That's true. So, you know, I think I always ask myself, what does this character want? What does this character hope to achieve? And it should be outside of any kind of, you know, outside of the thriller plot that's involved. What does this person want? What does this person hope to keep or to leave behind or whatever? So, that's an important question.
So your agents and editors and whoever decides all this stuff really is convinced that you writing a different book each time and not having the same characters are going to sell better than having the same characters over again.
Actually, it's just the opposite. I think they'd all love it if I wrote a series. And I'm the one who's kind of saying, oh, well, I'm not sure if I really, you know, I'm not an expert at ballistics, I'm not an expert at forensics or any of that. And so I think, you know, you need someone like that to keep a series moving forward. You need a real crime expert, and I'd be out of my element, I think. So I'm probably going to have to do a lot more research, you know, if I decide to ever do a series, so that I know what I'm talking about, you know. I worked for the railroads for a while. Maybe I could have somebody as a railroad detective. I don't know. That would be kind of fun. A lot of people love the railroads, so, you know, that hasn't been tapped yet.
What about Vicious did you agonize over? What parts of the book did you have trouble with?
That's a good question. I think some of the things I had problems with were the psychological motives for this killer known as Mama's Boy.
So do you call up a psychologist and say, help me out? What, I have this really deranged killer in here.
Exactly. One of my neighbors across the street is a psychologist.
Well, how fortuitous.
I know, and it was great.
And you have a key to their door, too?
No, I don't. Dang it. He's got a nice house, too. Anyway.
Just think, you could pull his notes and look through the... Oh, boy, that'd be
right.
Terrible, isn't it?
It's like late at night, I could sneak over there and say, never mind me, I'm just looking at your notes. But, you know, he was telling me all about a sociopath and how they work. And so the funny thing about it is a lot of the things that, you know, I find difficult, the challenges are the things that really end up being fascinating. You know what I mean? And where I really, you know, the more work that goes into it, the more I really enjoy it. In Final Breath, I didn't know a thing about figure skating, and I wanted the woman to be a figure skater at one point. And it was fascinating reading up on all the lives of these figure skaters and, you know, figuring that out as a little sort of bit of research. So sometimes the things that you struggle with or think, I don't have any idea what I'm dealing with here, that turns out to be the most fascinating part of writing the book.
And that's what Linda Fairstein did with one of her books. She had it was all about art, and it was just fascinating to read all this stuff about art you didn't know before.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's great when I can put something in there that, you know, like you were talking about earlier, if the reader can learn something, that's, you know, more power to you as a writer.
Have you ever read a writer and thought, oh, I want to write like that person?
Oh, God, good question. Sure. I got, you know, I think especially with my first two books when I wrote Actors, I was reading a lot of William Goldman, who was big in the...
Oh, right. Marathon Man.
Marathon Man. You You're good. You
know? Yeah.
And Boys and Girls Together, and I just read a ton of his stuff.
Did he do Boys from Brazil?
I think he did the screenplay. Yeah,
okay.
Boys from Brazil, Ira Levin did the book. But
Ira Levin.
Yeah, William Goldman did the screenplay. He did a lot of screenplays. He was Bush Cassidy, a Sundance Kid. And,
you know a lot about movies.
Oh, I'm a movie file, too. That's what I do to relax. Watch a good movie.
Can you imagine a movie being made out of one of your books?
I'd love it to happen. There was a movie deal involved with Only Son. For a while there, Tom Hanks was interested in doing it back in the right after he did Forrest Gump. So I was very thrilled and got to keep the money and everything else. But they never made it into a movie. The author of Agnes of God, John Pielmeyer,
mm-hmm.
wrote the screenplay. I never got to see the screenplay, but it was supposed to be Tom Hanks and Holly Hunter, and David Seltzer, who wrote The Omen, was going to direct it, and it just never happened. It just, you know.
Oh, that's too bad.
Went to turn around, so.
But you never found out why they never made it.
You know, I didn't. I think MGM went under new management, and they dropped a lot of their projects, and that was one of them that got dropped. So, but fortunately, I got to keep the option money. So, you know.
Does writing books like this, does it keep you fulfilled? Do you feel like you've fulfilled something in your life from these? I mean, do you feel like, or do you feel like there's more you want to do?
It's pretty fulfilling. Yeah, I think that's a great question too. I think it's very fulfilling, and it's one of the perks is, you know, getting these very nice emails from people saying, you know, that they really enjoyed the book, or, you know, some of my books, a lot of times I have troubled teenagers in my books, and it's great to hear from people who are guidance counselors at high school saying, you know, I wish I could pass your book on to several of the teenagers that I'm dealing with, because they think they're all alone, you know. And I've actually had teenagers saying that their parents gave them a copy of my book, and that's always really nice to hear, that, you know, the parents are saying, hey, my kid will relate to this. And it's nice to hear, too. I had a character in one of my books that had ALS, and I heard from somebody whose dad had recently died of ALS, and she said she just wanted to thank me for you know, bringing people's attention to that.
There are people too. I think we sometimes forget that the people that are sick are still people. They're still the same person. They're just not as fast as you and I. They can't do things like
exactly.
you and I can. But they're still, the person is still there inside that, you know. And we tend to forget that, I think, sometimes.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I mean, it's neglected, and when you write a character like that in the book, it's so much more work, I would think. I mean, you have to get everything down exactly how it is, and you have to
know. Like I say, the payoff was so nice, because she said when she was reading it, she said she saw all the signs that were happening to this character, and she said she turned to one of her siblings, I think it was, and she said, you know, I think this guy has ALS in the book, and she said, you know, that I got everything down right about how the family has to deal with it and everything else.
So, you live near a doctor, don't you?
No, I have to usually it's Google, and I'll ask doctors. I actually have a good friend who's a doctor. He's an oncologist, so I'll get some good stuff from him too. I'm like, where can a bullet go where they could still be walking, and you know, and he'll tell me. So
what are we going to learn in upcoming books? What things are we going to learn about?
Oh, in my next book?
Yeah. I mean, are we going to learn about, you know, something we don't know about? I'm reading a book by Marshall Karp. It's all about scrapbooking and how interesting scrapbooking is. I want to learn so much stuff. I want to learn.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think now. Let's see. No, nothing about that. More demented thinking, maybe. More thrills. Usually there is something that I, you know, for example, in Final Breath, my main character was a TV news correspondent, and I think people learned a lot about, you know, that, because my brother-in-law is a TV, he's on the Today Show, and so I just kind of...
Oh, is he really?
Found out, yeah, he does these segments called Leonard's Look on the Today Show. His name's Mike Leonard.
And he's your brother-in-law?
Yeah. In fact, he had a bestseller called The Ride of Our Lives. About taking his parents out on a cross-country Winnebago trip, and they're both in their late 80s at the time, and it was pretty funny.
Is there a book that you really want to write that they won't let you write?
Not yet. I think I
do you have an idea for a really great book?
Well, you know, now that you mention it, I did. And maybe I shouldn't say it because somebody might steal it, but I'll go ahead and say it. I always wanted to do something, a thriller set during World War II, with Rosie the Riveters. Somebody's killing the Rosie the Riveters because they don't think a woman should.
Will you do it?
I've wanted to, and each time I pitch it to my editor, once every 5 years, and he always says no.
Really? Well, yeah. Now, what would they be upset if you went to another publisher and had it published through them?
Oh, I think they would be, and yeah. I don't blame them.
I don't know. I mean, but a lot of authors, you know, get multiple publishing houses. I mean, it happens
a lot.
True. So,
that's
I mean,
true. I think I'm. I don't want to push my luck. They've been very good to me, so I wouldn't want to jump ship. But you know, maybe when I get real old, I'll write that story. But
what do you do in your spare time?
Let's see. I work part time, like once in a blue moon. I'm a fill-in guy at a video store, so that keeps me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a great job to have. In fact, I set one of my books, Watch Them Die, was set in a video store. The main character was a video store clerk, and someone was stalking her and leaving videos wound to certain death scenes.
I think did I read that?
I think you might have read that one. I think we talked about that one.
That rings a bell.
I work there part time, and it's great. It's great to get out and meet people, and it's between that and the book, I'm like a mini celebrity in my neighborhood because you know they know me from the video store, they know me from the book, so that it's very nice to go out for a walk and I run into several people I know, but that keeps me busy. And then I like movies, go out with friends, the normal stuff. Waiting for the Seattle weather to get a little bit nicer. It was nice here today, but during the summer I love hitting the beach. We have a great swimming area at Lake Washington. It's beautiful, fresh water swimming there. So I'd love to go swimming during the summer.
I think you told me you have a deadline for September for the next book. That's when you're...
It's next week. Can you believe it?
Oh, it's next week. Oh,
I've got about 100 pages to go, so it's going to be some...
You've got to write 100 pages by next week?
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Oh, it could. You know,
100 pages? That's a lot of pages.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, they're all outlined, so it's a matter of just sort of pacing myself.
Well, what does it take to do 100 pages? And you said by next week sometime?
Probably, I'm guessing, the end of next week. So, yeah.
That
so,
would
I mean,
be July...
10 pages a day.
July 9th, by July 9th, then.
Yeah, by about July 9th. You got it. You nailed it.
And you really think you can do that?
I'm hoping.
I wish we could flash forward to see if it really. I wish we could flash forward to see if it really happens.
Oh yeah, I wish I could just flash forward and have it
already. It seems like an excessive amount of pages. It sounds like you're going to be up all night some nights.
Well, the you know.
And you are a night owl.
I'm a night owl, so but it gets easier to write.
I thought as you got older, you weren't so much as a night owl anymore. No, a lot of people. I thought older people usually went to bed earlier.
I've heard that, but not me. I'm still. In fact, it's worse. I get more undisciplined about going to bed. You know, early. So I stay up later and later. So.
Well, I have books that keep me awake at night. So that's a different story. I have books that I can't wait to finish reading. So I have to stay up and read them all.
Well, yeah. that's always a great compliment too when somebody says, you know, I was up till 3:30 in the morning reading your book. Occasionally, I'll be on the internet. You know, researching, and I see a mail thing pop up, and I'll check my mail, and it's some fan that's just finished a book, and she's like, "Now I'm too scared to go to bed." Blah 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 blah, and so,
and
I'm like, "Well, sorry about that, but I actually am very flattered."
Right. What one thing about you would we be surprised to know?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Anything? Is anything jump? When I say that, what's the first thing you think of?
Oh, just like, you know, interesting facts or something like that. You know, that I think I can tell you that I'm associated with one of the most famous murders in history.
You are?
Yes. When I was a kid, my parents and my family moved to a new house in Chicago, and it was in October of 1963, and on November 22nd, the police and the FBI came to our house because they were looking for the previous owner, and he sold the gun to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, so though, is Klein Sporting Goods in Chicago, where he bought the gun. And I recently...
You could write a book about that.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I was telling you I work for the railroads, and one of our places that we worked for was Dallas. And I was taking a shuttle to the hotel where I had a meeting with the railroads, and the guy next to me was like, what do you do? And I said, I work for the railroads. And I said, what do you do? And he said, I'm a Kennedy assassination expert. And I said, well, let me tell you. And he was just floored. He said, well, they've got the receipt up at the sixth floor museum at the depository, the book depository. He said, it says Klein Sporting Goods, Chicago, Illinois. And in fact, when I read an article about Mr. Klein, and apparently his kids didn't know about this until he was ready to pass away. He told his sons that that was his store where Oswald had bought the gun, and we had known, my family had known all along since they came to our house. I think they must have gotten a hold of him at work or something like that.
So, well, little did I know the answer I would get. What a great question, and even better answer. I'm
well,
just
it's
floored.
Just one of those little fun facts, it's in my bio on my website. So check out my website. There's a few other fun facts.
I got to see Robert Hedges when I was in California. Does that count for anything?
Oh yeah, that's good. I like that.
All I did was see him, though. I didn't really talk to him. I just saw him in a window. The one person that I saw when I went to California, I thought, I'm going to meet all these stars, and he's the only one I saw.
You see Robert Hedges.
And wait a minute, from Welcome Back Carter, and I assume everybody knows that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's funny who you sort of glimpsed. I was in the airport once and looked up, and there was Jesse Jackson. I was like, and he just sort of smiled at me. I was like, oh, yeah, hi. I just waved.
See, I'd be excited about it. I would be excited. That excites me. I don't know why. I must be weird in the head somewhere.
Oh, I think we're all stargazers. I think we really are. It's fun when you meet somebody. I mean, I talked about my brother-in-law with the Today Show. His dad, I knew Jesse Owens, and I was over at my brother-in-law's dad's house once, and there's this man there talking to his dad, and his dad says, Kevin, this is Jesse Owens, and I'm like, well, hello, Mr. Owens. And inside, I was just like leaping. I'm like, I can't believe you took those gold medals and shoved them down Hitler's throat. You're a hero. So it's funny. You just have to just try and act cool in front of these people.
Well, it's been great to talk to you. This has been wonderful. We could go on all night, but I guess we better end it at some point.
Yeah, I guess we only got so much time before people are going to go. When are they going to wrap it up?
Well, you're funny, and you laugh at all my jokes, so I like you even more. Even though they're not supposed to be jokes, I just come out with
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. take it seriously, bud, or take it somewhere else.
That's right. The new book is called Vicious. It's by Kevin O'Brien. It's book number, what did you say, 10?
This is 11.
11. Wow, 11. Even though there's only, it shows 10 on the book. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm confused.
That actor's book is out of print, so technically it is the 10th book that's available.
But anyway, this has been Kevin O'Brien and me, David English, talking about Vicious, and it's out in all your bookstores from Pinnacle, and we will talk to you next time.
Oh, David, thank you so much. I always have a great time talking to you.